appointed hour here. We've got enough people for a quorum. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. First item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. I don't see Julie here tonight. She won't be here, so we could probably scratch the economic development update. Mark, do you have a motion to accept the agenda, approve the agenda? Garrett?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. All right, the first order of business, and I guess would be the election of officers, the first one being chairman. Do I have any nominations from the floor for chairman? Don't all speak at once.
Larry.
He cannot be here. Dust, you want?
Last man standing, I think. Yeah, I'll do it.
I nominate Gus. Wait a minute, there's Larry. Larry, you want to be chairman? I already put your name in there, but you didn't speak up.
You didn't deny it.
Yeah.
What happens when you're late?
We were just discussing election of members.
Everybody don't need a second for nomination. Right?
Second. Fine.
If we do.
Okay. Second, Larry?
Second.
Oh,
if we need it, yes, sir. Any other nominations? Chairman, going once. Right. Guess we could approve the nomination or the selection by acclamation.
Aye.
All right, take it away.
Now you got
it. Okay.
Hear it.
Well.
We need him to run the
good for the approval of the minutes?
Yes.
Right. You got a vice chairman.
Vice chairman. Mm-hmm. Okay, we need a vice chairman.
I nominate Larry.
I second.
My only hesitation is my travel schedule in the summers.
We haven't met too much during the summer.
You're the vice chairman, that's okay. Our chairman's always going to be here.
All right.
So I go back to my original statement, I nominate Larry.
Second.
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So carried?
Abstain.
Good job. The approval of minutes.
I'll make that motion. Approve the minutes.
As published?
I wasn't here, so I can't comment whether they're correct or not.
Okay. So the approval of minutes as written. Can I have a vote on the minutes?
Aye.
Carried.
Can you take notes that fast? Oh, okay.
Declaration of letters, opinions, or other guidance from outside advisory committee?
I think you need to add in text now. So.
Thank you, Mike.
Anything, Jim?
Just one, I guess. I guess this is an opinion. There was an editorial in the Cape Gazette on January 28th. This, I guess, came out after the business plan was presented. Just pointed out the fact that the report deemed that the airport was well run, so thought I'd share that opinion with you. So that's all I got.
Anything from the FAA on the VOR? Or is that,
well,
that number 10, we'll, I see that number 10.
We'll talk about that number 10, I guess.
Okay.
I should have asked y'all to add a wings and wheels update, because we are having meetings now and have been making some movement on where we're going to go with it this year.
Do you
just put that down under?
Well, that can be number 8, economic development. That's part of economic development.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wings and wheels under economic development.
All right. Yeah, we have some exciting things going on this October.
Uh, under the airport paving, do you want to address that now or?
I'll do it on the airport update.
Okay. Wildlife management update?
Really nothing to update. Still have animals.
What about the snow out?
Nobody's told me they've seen any. I know they've been around, but you know, they were kind of the animal du jour for a while, and a lot of articles in the paper and stuff. But
I haven't seen any here. I haven't even seen any geese down here in the lake.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Which it was a surprise.
Buzzards in the worst. I mean, they seem to hang over here by the
flag. They were there about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
How about the deer population?
I saw 12 on the right outside the airport across the street on the way here tonight.
We still have an issue with one part of the fence that they're real easy to get through, and unfortunately that area is underwater, and so our guys can't get out there and close that up, but the deer are getting through, and as soon as they can get to that, they'll close that area up. We'll do another roundup or something.
I mean, I think it's gotten a lot better from what I've seen.
I agree.
You come in here at night and you don't have a bunch of eyes looking at you.
And you're
shaking your head no?
I haven't seen any issues lately at all.
Yeah. And with the night landing example, you can practice here. It gives you a little bit of confidence coming in too. And you haven't had that scare.
For night landings, I generally buzz a runway one time and come back over.
Anything else on wildlife, anybody? Airport update?
Okay. We had a public meeting last Wednesday night here. We had three people, two of the neighbor ladies and Walt Messick, so it wasn't very well attended. But I just want to kind of go through the things that we did tell the public, because I'm sure you're all interested in it too. But I'll just give you the Reader's Digest version, because you've heard most of this already. We're getting ready to start what we call Package 2 of the runway extension project. It's Package 2, but it's been kind of a one big continuous project for the last several years to extend the runway, clear the obstructions, the runway lighting upgrades. This portion of the project is going to mill and pave the original 5,000 feet of runway. And then we'll come back and groove the 5,500 feet of runway, because we didn't groove any of it when we did the extension. We'll also install a MALS approach lighting system on the runway fore end, and along with that come some airfield lighting control upgrades. And then we'll restripe the whole thing, and we'll end up with displaced thresholds on both ends of the runway, and I'll tell you about that more in a minute. And then, of course, since we change the thresholds, we're going to have to move the pappies. So both sets of pappies will be moved. We've completed the design. We've selected the contractor, George and Lynch. We did that last fall. And we've also got the FAA grant for about $4.3 million for the project. Just kind of where we left off with Package 1. The runway extension is in place. We have 5,500 feet of pavement out there. We put the threshold for runway 4 back to where it was originally. So we have a 500 foot displaced threshold. If you've been flying out there, you've seen that, you know what I'm talking about. Runway 22, the threshold didn't change. The pappies haven't changed. The instrument approaches haven't changed. Kind of back where we were, we have that extra 500 feet. We removed about 38 acres of obstructions out there. I don't like to say we cut down trees because people don't like that, but we removed 38 acres of obstructions, and that's a good thing. And then we started the beginning of the approach lighting system. You know, we did the things that made sense to do as we were going along, and had the ground open then. We also changed all the lights on the runway to LED lights. Installed a new electric circuit, some controls.
And they look good at night. They really do.
And I've heard nothing but good things about it. Okay, so that's where we left off. And now we're ready to start Package 2. Package 2 is going to be, like I said, mill, pave, groove, restripe, et cetera. It's a 100 consecutive calendar day project. So, you know, when we start, they've got 100 days to get the project complete. As we've talked about in the past, it's going to involve 2 3-week complete closures of runway 422 with a 1 week opening in the middle. That's the plan. The date we're planning on starting that is going to be March 29th, which is a Saturday. They're going to close it on Saturday and start working on a Saturday. You're not going to see them come out and put the X's up on Saturday, then come back on Monday. So it's closed, they're going to start working. So 3 weeks, that brings it to April 18th, which is Good Friday. Reopen the runway for a week after that, and then close it again on April 26th through May 16th. So three weeks closed, 1 week open, 3 weeks closed.
The week we're open is Easter week.
So. Right. Mm-hmm. Right,
we'll be able to taxi across.
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
We have to let the pavement sit for 30 days to cure before we can come back and cut the little grooves in it. So sometime after the 30-day point, we're going to come back. We've got a 5-day closure scheduled to do the grooving. How that will exactly work out, you know, we'll keep you updated on that. But contractually, we've given them 5 days of a runway closure, Monday to Friday, to get that work done.
And that's Georgia and Tulsa.
Yep.
Well, part of that contract, Jack, they have a sub that does it. Mm-hmm. Right. Cardinal Grooving, specialist in that.
Now, runway 1028 will be open during this whole time, except for the time where the equipment is on runway 4, but in the approach area to runway 1028, so kind of in that section of the runway. The contract is originally scheduled to give them 1 day to do their work in there and get out of it. That's really not how you construct the project. You know, the construction equipment is going to be moving through that area. So we're looking at how we're going to do that. We'll probably end up with like 2 or 3 days of 2 or 3 hours of closing while they're doing that work. Stay
would
tuned.
Would that be posted?
Well,
do you have an idea as the time gets closer?
As we know things, we'll put out the emails that we've been putting out, and not sure how else we can get the word out to people, but you know, something on the bulletin board or something. But
are those all day closures, or just working hour closures, or is it 5-3?
It's all about 1028.
Yeah.
No, I'm done at 422 for the grooving.
When they groove it.
In other words, they're going to work 8 to 5, and at 5:30 we can land?
Here's my answer.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's one of the things we're going to work with them on where the schedule is. I think the way it's written, he has the 5 days available to him.
Mm-hmm.
But we can certainly press him if he's not going to be working, then it's safe to see if we can get it back open in the night.
That's not really what I'm asking. I'm asking, will the runway reopen each day at 5 p.m.?
The big, large runway, right?
The main runway, 422.
I would count on right now, no. And during the groove, a 5-day grooving, but we have some flexibility on when that starts. But
yeah, you know, that's what I was trying to say is that if we can work with him to open it at night and safe, we'll press him to do it. But I think the way it's written is contractually we can have the 5-day closure.
Oh, okay, all right.
But we haven't been on that. We've been focusing on this first portion, getting started. And getting these 2 3-week periods.
My concern would be the debris on the runway from the grooving process. And
yeah.
And then they elect to work 24 hours too. Mm-hmm.
Those guys are from out of town. I think Virginia. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to come up here and knock it out.
Yeah.
And we're talking summertime, so temperatures are going to be a factor, and you may end up seeing them working, doing the grooving at night,
mm-hmm.
and not be here during the day, and you're going to wonder what. Why can't we have the runway open? But our goal is to have the runway open as much as possible.
Maybe that lateral dip that's across the runway down toward, I guess it's probably about 500 feet from the end of the...
It'll be gone.
But, I mean, we've seen it. Do we know what's causing that? Or, I mean, do we...
I don't
been looked at.
I'm trying to think. I looked at it in the past, and there was no obvious. It's not culvert underneath that's failing.
Yeah,
it was just, you know, the soils are bad on the airport.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is.
But I mean, if it was a soils issue, you would think it wouldn't be just right across that.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't feel it. Your wheels are too big.
Wheels are only 47 inches. Well, I'll fly to Comanche too.
just by the time you're throwing the throttle to it,
yeah,
checking your
which,
gauges,
which
and
end?
All of a sudden, if you're taking off on the forward direction.
Yeah.
So, and there's just a little dip right there.
Mm-hmm. My recollection is, our feeling was it didn't require any special attention, but we'll revisit it.
I've landed over Tangier.
2 inches?
So this is not the...
2 inches is the overlay plus filling in where, you know, in addition to that, so
right,
there'll be like some leveling course first and then basically two consonant inches.
Go ahead.
Because that's what's on there now, isn't it? 2 inches? Or is there more than that?
Oh, there's way more.
Is there more than that? Yeah. Everything gets at least a scratch coat to get rid of the grooving that's there.
Gotcha.
Okay, so the first 3 week closure, we're going to start on the runway 4 end. Taxiway Bravo will be open to cross the runway. So I'll require some back taxiing probably on 1028, but that'll be available. All the other taxi routes will be closed. The second 3 weeks, we move to the other end of the runway, and taxiway Delta is now going to be open to get out to the runway. So, and then as we finish each one, it gets temporary striping put on, and it'll have the new thresholds that I'll tell you about in a minute. So that'll mean we're going to lose the LPV and the LNAV VNAV minimums like we did last year when we displaced the threshold for construction. We'll also complete the MALS installation, the medium intensity approach lighting system. It's a MALS. There's no strobe lights involved. The runway alignment lights or the other ones. Straight MALS. There's going to be two towers on the other side of Park Avenue, part of this, and then the MALS shelter with all the controls and regulators and stuff will be on. Hidden away over on the other side of Park Avenue. After construction, on the runway 4 end, if you've seen the concrete strip that goes across there, that's the threshold light bar for the MALS. That'll be the new threshold. That's a 370 foot displaced threshold. So kind of we gain 130 feet there. So like I said, 370 feet on that end. On the runway 22 end, the displaced threshold is 170 feet. So, same markings, the arrows, the arrowheads, the threshold bar on both ends. Because we've done that, obviously, that messes up the PAPIs. The PAPIs will have to be relocated. As you've seen out there now, the runway 4 end, we've got a brand new set of PAPIs sitting out there on the pads waiting to be turned on. And then on the other end, those fixtures will get physically moved from where they are now to the new pads that you may have seen out there. So as far as declared distances, everything is 5,500 feet except for the landing distances available on both ends. The runway 4 end is 5,130 and the other end is 5,330. So, let's see.
As far as me operating out of here with the B-25, these dates are really pretty good because we hadn't even planned to return until the 5th of May. We're down south until the 5th of May. We left the 28th of December, took it to Georgia to take the wings off. And it was going to be too cold up here to take the wings off, so we go to Georgia and it's 28 degrees. that'll work out good. It's only about 10 days that I can't... can't land in here.
Right. The PAPIs, they're going to be a little bit different. Still 3-degree glide path. We changed the threshold crossing height to 45 feet, which is the 737 standard, so a little bit higher. So that'll be a change. We're still working on the instrument approaches. We've got four approaches, two GPS, two VORs. They all get changed as part of this. Because of displaced thresholds and all the obstruction removal that we've done, the runway 22 end would be no lower than a mile. The runway 4 end, I'm still waiting to see how that's going to come out. It's supposed to be a significant improvement. The FAA has gone through and designed the approaches already. They're on the website. Please don't go to the website and look at them, because you'll go crazy with what they've got on there. They didn't take into account all the obstructions that we worked all winter with them on, telling them that they were gone. So the ones that are on the website are not as good as what they're going to be. In fact, they're not. You can't even fly them at night, according to the ones that are there. So we're working with the FAA. Has gone out to Oklahoma City for them to make the changes, and we should be hearing something from that pretty soon. The publication date that we have planned right now is July 24th to have the new approaches up and running. There's obviously going to be a gap between, you know, when we move thresholds around and July 24th. So what I'm expecting to happen is the same thing that happened last year during construction. You lose those two sets of minimums. You can still fly the straight in and the LNAV minimums for the GPS approach. Just you can't fly those other ones.
You can't fly the VOR ones?
You can fly the straight in VOR.
Okay.
And then the LNAV minimums on the GPS. So I'm hoping that, you know, being summertime, you know, we don't get the fog and all the other stuff that brings the weather down where you really need those other minimums, but we'll see. The other thing that has to happen is that all this stuff has to be flight checked. The FAA requires 2 months ahead of time before publication to flight check the instrument approaches. In order to do that, we have to have the threshold bar in place and the numbers, runway numbers. Just looking at the schedule and how, you know, when those things are going to get painted, it's going to be pretty tight. You know, we can make the July 24th date. There's a chance the FAA may work with us on the runway, it'll be the runway 4 end, that if we get that done, they'll give us they'll flight check it within the 2 months, but no promises there. The PAPIs also have to be flight checked, and then the MALs will have to be flight checked. Don't need the PAPIs or the MALs to get the approaches up and running, but it costs money for the FAA to come and do the flight check. So we're working with all those things and, you know, trying to match our schedule to their schedule, and hopefully it's all going to work out.
What's the minimums looking like for, in my case, I'm worried about the VOR ones. They were 620, 440 here on the 22 in, and 680 on the 4, I think.
It'll be lower.
Okay.
I know that even when I'm getting the obstructions wrong, it was lower. I'm trying to think, the visibility, like I said, 2.2 is not going to be any less than a mile, but the ones that are above a mile now will come down to a mile. And then on the fore end, there's a possibility of 3/4 of a mile, but don't hold me to it. Once the MALS is commissioned and flight checked, then we can get a 1/4 of a mile credit on the approach on that end, as long as the MALS work. And that may be just, you know, another amendment down the line after the initial round of approaches get published. So, any questions on the project?
You mentioned about another tower going over the other side. Where's your location?
Well, there's two light towers. You know, kind of when you go up to past Dover Air Force Base, those light towers that they have there.
Where's the one going over?
Just be in line with the runway.
Okay.
You know, like every 200 feet or. I think it's every 200 feet there'll be one of those towers, just a T with the floodlights.
Park.
With the floodlights.
Old Byers Park, ballpark in that area, vicinity. One of them.
No. It'll be in line with the runway.
Yeah, which is
so across Park Avenue. So kind of between Mrs. Tyndall and Downs over, in just.
Oh,
lined up with the end of the runway.
Okay, I understand now. Park Avenue.
What are you gonna do when they take that route out and have to extend the runway, or go to extend the runway? Don't have to go through that expense again?
Probably.
We tried to figure out a way to plan. We tried to figure out if there was a way we could make those lights temporary, or figure out, you know, if there was concrete we could put in the ground that you can move them, but not knowing how the road was going to be realigned and not knowing the time frame for when the road was going to be realigned, it just became so complex that we would end up spending a lot of money for, and might not even get the situation correct, you know. So we just said we'll go with dealing with the current situation as best we can and deal with the road realignment and its impacts on the lights later.
Mike, they don't have a master plan for that road?
Yeah, but, okay, we have a drawing of where we think the road should go, but it's not based upon any survey. And it's not based upon, you know, we know roughly where the wetlands are, but say they move it 7 years from now and the wetland delineation could be a little bit different.
Could find a cemetery, a burial ground in there.
Yeah, we got to deal with the alignment of how we cross the railroad is, you know, very particular about the angle they want you to bring this road into the railroad, and that could slide it, you know, a couple hundred feet.
This has been going for a number of years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the Georgetown bypass.
Yeah.
And this is actually a DelDOT project now. This is a DelDOT project now. It's in their capital plan. So, you know, they're kind of going through the same thing that we went through, you know, 8 years ago. As far as choosing an alignment, doing the survey.
How about the trees that are on the end of where between the ball field and there's those scraggly ones that were kind of left there? Just
yeah, I'm working on those. I went over there, and they're kind of on an island over there. It's hard to get the tree guy out there, but I'm working with the Delaware Coastline Railroad and their tree guy. We're gonna get those taken care of.
Good.
They're officially not obstructions. They just make people nervous, and so we'll remove them. And
I wanted to talk about the schedule, about the three week 3-1-3, I call it. But weather, and I know we've talked about it before, and we talked about it in the pre-con meeting last week a little bit, but whether there's still an opportunity to just start March 29th and just keep working and don't stop working until the project's done, instead of reopening for a week. As an impacted business owner, and Mark, you can speak up if you have, I know you and I talked last week, but there's no reason from a business standpoint. It doesn't help the businesses, the bigger businesses anyway, to open that week. It doesn't really do much. To me, it has a greater impact that we get it done before Memorial Day. So I just wanted to put it out there and see if you guys...
Well, we are going to be done before Memorial Day. And if we'd written the contract differently, I think back at the time we were writing the contract specs, I mean, people like yourself and Mark thought the hole in the middle was a benefit because it would give you an opportunity to bring in a plane if need be. So that's kind of the way we wrote the contract, and that's the way George and Lynch bid it. We have liquidated damages tied to them running over $10,000 a day.
That's it. That's if they run into that 1 week gap.
Run
so
into
there's
the
two,
run,
two
one,
separate penalties.
That's correct. 3 weeks, you run over the first 3 weeks, then you got the $10,000 a day. You run over the second 3 weeks, you got $10,000 a day.
Can you get a portion of that?
I don't think that was in the contract.
And my concern is that we start monkeying with the specs,
right,
and they run over. I think it would be a real challenge to us to enforce that they're running over anyway. They may take up the whole 7 weeks without the 7 days in the middle, and I'm not sure we could enforce the liquidated damages if they do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we did ask them, and we went back after the meeting, had a couple conversations, and asked them just to reiterate, are you willing to offer us anything back if we did this? You know, in other words, would you contractually commit to shorten the time if we let you work 6 weeks instead of three and three, all six together, would that be five? You know? No, absolutely not. No credit. We can't do that. So there's nothing that's going to be gained. Certainly other contractors who didn't bid this job because of that penalty, or did bid it and didn't get it and found out you were changing something that substantially, would rightfully have been upset. So that, you know, one concern. The other thing we talked a little bit at the meeting was, if we should get bad weather, a contractor has said, look, if we have rain and it's a shower kind of thing, I'm committed to stay in there and wait till the shower passes, you know, it's not like I'm in the dirt, you know, mm-hmm. we could dry it off and keep on going. But he still might get that downpour that's a 10-hour and he can't stay in there. So we may need to still push into that week, you know, and that's nice to have that buffer built in and still not push the far end towards, you know, Memorial Day. We do have that 1 week before Memorial Day, but again, that second 3 weeks could have a little problem there. So it's a nice built-in buffer should that happen. These guys are supposed to work 16 hours a day or up to 16 hours a day. And as he said, a lot of my guys, if they work 16 hours a day, I'm going to need to give a day or two off. Now, so I really don't want to work that week.
How are they doing it? How are they doing half or halfway across or halfway down?
Halfway down.
Halfway down?
Yeah. All the way across, half more, about half, okay. Roughly. So they've thought about it. The other thing is they could have equipment problems, material supply problems. That week in there, they're thinking, you know, it might actually be a darn good thing we've built it in.
Yeah.
So they've not come to us. They've said, hey, look, we're willing to work with you. You know, you tell us to do something different, but we're not voluntarily going to ask to change the contract. Let us know what you need to do, but we'd rather stick to the contract as well.
It's been tough to get the final construction schedule from them, and my other concern is if we change, as Garrett is suggesting, we got to start that construction schedule process again and go through that all. And I don't want to miss that March 29th date as a result.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, the week that's scheduled to be open, if they're running behind in the first 3 week piece, we'll just let them work through it. If necessary, to work through that, we can make up the ground there.
Yeah, for that first phase.
Are they working on federal pay?
I'm sorry, which day?
Are they working on federal pay?
They get the higher rate of whether it's state
rates
or federal.
They work
the
time of everything, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be big bucks for tying the guys, trying to get these guys to work.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's built that into his bid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, but we're paying for it.
Oh, yeah?
They're not going to be working 16 hours a day for it all, Sam.
Just 6 weeks.
We're not working. I mean, they might be
weeks,
there.
Well, they got to get it done.
They're working 16 hours a day.
Well, if he does double shifts, you know, two 8-hour shifts, it would
6 weeks?
Oh.
And
yeah,
there won't be overtime on it.
Huh?
Yeah. There won't be overtime on it. They'll run double shifts.
That's if they do the whole 16 hours. They may choose to work 10 or 11
hour
days and just do that, too.
Because, see, it ties up to plant, so that's why it's problematic. They want to get it done as quick as possible.
Oh, yeah.
If you go past that Memorial Day, then you're going to get into towards race weekend, and I don't know what Julie probably needs to make sure she understands that time schedule, because if she's tried to talk some sort of pit crews coming in, and they all of a sudden get the runway closed on them, you're not going to get them back next year.
Yeah.
And
what's that date? I know, Jim, you had it. We talked before.
I mean, it's Monday before Memorial Day, which is the 30th. So it'd be that Monday before.
Which day are you looking for?
The race weekend, essentially.
Race weekend,
the first,
I think,
June 6th.
June 2nd or something like that. June 2nd.
Why did we come up with the idea of points on the side of the building?
That's how the configuration of that approach lighting system.
How did we get along with that for the past 40 years? We haven't had it extended.
You've not been able to do certain approaches.
Pardon, do
it limits what you're able to do. We've been limited for those 40 years in what we're able to do.
Well, but don't forget, we've had 500 feet on this thing. We've got lots of money in that.
Yeah, but
now we're talking about going across something that can be very temporary. I'm hoping in the next couple of years we'll see a road or something bypass here. I mean, that's my hope, and I'm hoping that we can get up with somewhere.
Yeah.
I just can't see, when you push down trees, you're gaining an interest here, and now we're talking about more lights. It just seems like there's no end to this thing. I mean, we're acting like we're spending other people's money, the way it looks to me.
Well, In order to increase the capability of the airport, that those are the things that have to happen.
You have increased it. You've pushed those trees down. You spent $40,000 on an acre piece of land or push it up.
That didn't increase our capability at all.
How about that house that sits there? What's his name? Not a mechanic.
Downs.
Yeah, what about his house? Isn't that somewhere in our way?
Bruce Downs.
There were trees that had grown too tall that we trimmed in his property. For the next 500 feet, we'll have to own his property. But if you're going to increase the capability of the airport, those are the things that have to happen.
Well, that house didn't weigh. It looks like to me that house is as much in weight as putting a light up there. I mean,
not with the first 500 feet.
Do what?
Not with the first 500 feet. He's outside of the area.
You're going to come so early, I guess I'll put a couple lights up on the fence. I love them.
County's been trying to buy that for a long period of time, but
we're getting closer.
Yeah,
we're closer.
Well, they weren't close to start with because it wasn't realistic. I know both sides. So
yeah.
No, and you know it wasn't realistic to start with. Yeah, put them out of business.
Did I answer your question?
It gives me more. More insight into why it is the way it is. It's just that, the George and Lynch project manager, Derek, he made it sound like he was going to be all they could do.
Well.
And if there's like a day of rain, a day of rain delays it a day. I mean, there's no factor for weather. I mean, I don't know if he's just trying to put some scare tactics out, but he made it sound like there is. I mean, I asked him, I said, did you build any weather delays in your schedule? Nope.
I mean, it's tight. 16 hours a day, that's $10,000 a day. It's a lot of work.
He doesn't sound very confident that he's going to get it done.
Yeah.
I talked to him on the phone a couple of days ago, and he just doesn't give me the confidence that it's going to get done within the schedule.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping he's trying to under promise and over deliver kind of thing.
A lot of contractors
do that.
Yeah.
His dad runs the operation, so
yeah.
I think it'll be all right.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm just.
I would have, of all the contractors, I have the most confidence that they'll get it done.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely agree with you. We feel very happy and confident that we got George and Lynch. We have a lot of good contractors in the state, but they're one of the best when it comes to asphalt. They control their production because they own their own plant.
Yep.
Okay.
This is the kind of work they do. So we could have done a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was here last year. I know what worse is.
It's
going to be still a lot worse.
Ocean City, we know what happened in Ocean City, and that's worse. That's beyond worse. So
They had some problems with their paving equipment. We talked about that. They bought a brand new paver for this job. They know they had a problem. They got burned apparently with a heck of a penalty. They assured us that will not happen again.
Okay, well, sounds like we got the right contractor and the right guy assigned to the job.
He is a young fellow, but his dad has been working there for a long time, his whole career in asphalt, and his brother, and their whole family, So he's young, he's going to learn that he says some things, I think.
I think his dad was kicking him under the table.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
He got chewed a little bit after the meeting as to his tone, and I said, that's all right. You're young. You'll learn just how to speak in a public meeting.
Well, and my sensitivity is probably is heightened because as soon as I hear, a guy with any kind of reservations about getting it done on time, I'm perked up. So
I'd rather the contractor be honest about it, and not come in there trying to blow smoke up, and say, look, I'm concerned in that it is a challenging job, but I'm also committed to doing it the best we can to make sure that we're successful. And we're starting out working as a team to partner with them and come up with any ideas we can to shave any time we could.
Okay, all right, good. Thanks for
good weather benefits.
Yeah.
We haven't had much of that.
No, we haven't. So we're good.
All right, so that's that project. We've got some other paving projects in the industrial park that'll start this spring, moving the speed bumps and speed humps around and. Repaving to refurb some of the pavement that's falling apart out there. We're also starting the second phase of our concrete apron repair. We did the other side of the T-hanger last year. We're going to do the same thing on this side of the T-hanger this year. The project will start April 28th. Larry, I think we had talked the last time you were going to be okay with being able to get out through the other side in and out between Sussex Arrow and...
Yeah, we don't have trouble getting through there.
Okay.
You know, I can always tow out, you know, if it gets tight.
Okay.
You know, that's why you got wings that come off now, right?
I don't want to have to do that job again for another 10 years.
And that's a 30-day project. We'll do it in two phases, you know, one side and then the other. You know, like I said, you know, Garrett and I will work together on where to park people that are affected, and there's two people in the T-hanger that will be affected.
The low bidder was the same contract we had last year, and they worked without incident, so feel pretty good about it again.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Mitten. Yeah. Should keep us busy for a while. So, but that's pretty much all.
You can keep all the tie down spaces that are there now are going to remain there.
Yes.
Will be put back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you know when we first built those hangars, you know there was supposed to be some kind of a straightaway taxiway through there, and we'd lose some tie down spots.
Right.
And I always have said you don't need to do that. And it has not become a problem for us since we've been there.
We're going to restripe it.
Two different ways we can get through there, and it's never been an issue.
Yeah, we'll restripe it to FAA standards, you know, which means we're parking airplanes on top of the taxiway object-free area. And unless somebody complains, we're going to keep parking people there. But
I never have had an issue with those tie-downs being in front of us. We can get around them. Never been a problem.
Mm-hmm. That's all I got.
Can I ask one thing? I didn't get in my notes the dates that they're proposed to do the grooving, the 5-day closure.
We don't know. It'll be sometime 30 days, at least 30 days after they get done paving.
After the 16th?
Yeah,
right.
So
after May 16th?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe the 15th.
All right, we want to move on to Wings and Wheels. Larry, do you want to give us an update?
Well,
Todd
wants to make an announcement regarding, sorry to interrupt, Gus.
That's fine.
Julie Wheatley has given her letter of resignation to the county. Her last day will be Friday, this Friday. She's moving on to the Wallops Island Research Park down in Virginia. Today we don't have a replacement for economic development director. The contingency plan is all things airport and industrial park will go to Jim, and all things economic development will come to administration. And stay tuned for long-term plan, but for now that's how we're going to operate. So.
You gonna advertise for that?
To be continued.
To be continued.
Sure yet. But yes, any position will have to be advertised. But
Todd, something just rolled off. I don't know if it was a paper clip or what.
It's paper.
Oh, okay.
Larry, if there are Wings and Wheels concerns, you know, I'll find somebody.
We got a great committee.
Good.
You know, last year there was a lot of disappointment with the Friday night venue. Not only was the food mediocre, the entertainment was beyond terrible. They weren't prepared, it was just lousy. So this year we decided we're gonna sort of, bite the bullet and really do it right. I've contracted with the band, the Brooks Tegeler Band. They're an internationally known swing band. They do all 40 style stuff. Right after they do the venue here, they're going to Japan for a tour of Japan. I've known Brooks for probably 25 years and have been to a lot of his concerts and events that he does. This is something that will be worth seeing. We got two guys coming that do an Abbott and Costello routine so accurate that you would swear you'd step back in time. They go all over the country doing, you know, this particular routine. And the food, I guarantee you, will be an improvement over last year. That's for the Friday night venue. T
ticket price has gone up a little bit because we're having to pay almost four times as much, but you get what you pay for. You know, they learned that really the hard way last year by trying to keep it down cheap, and that's what we got, was something that, well, I don't know, I was really disappointed. So the Friday night venue is going to be something people don't want to miss. You know, Delaware Today has already got Wings and Wheels listed as a, you know, must-do event in Delaware. The other theme that we're going to be following for Saturday is First and Last, referring to the war in the Pacific and World War II. Dick Cole has agreed to come back. He will celebrate his 99th birthday just shortly before, the week before the event. He's doing 95 events with me this year. But to make it sort of rounded out, I initially contacted Dutch Van Kirk to see if he could come. Dutch was the navigator on the Enola Gay that dropped the Hiroshima bomb. Dutch, his leg's been going with him, and now he's confined to a wheelchair and has decided he's not going to travel. His mind is still sharp. He just published a new book, but he's just not going to travel anymore. But Russ, forget his last name, Steinbach or something like that, who was the navigator on the photo plane for the Hiroshima mission, and then he was a navigator on the Enola Gay, which was the weather plane for the Nagasaki mission. He's coming. So what we're going to have is a crew member from the first bombers that hit Japan in the Pacific War and World War II, and an original crew member of the last mission, First and the Last. So it would be a really unique, probably the last time we'll ever be able to do any of that, but just because of the age of these guys. But that'll be the focus. So our two guests, it's going to be a unique combination, having the First and the Last here at Georgetown for the Wings and Wheels. So between what we're planning for Friday night with the Brooks Tegeler Band and the Abbott Costello routine, and then Dick and Russ both being here on Saturday with the advertising we'll get for that, the folks in charge of parking is going to have a real challenge. Parking, and fortunately, I don't have to be involved with that myself, but we're going to be looking for all the help we can get as a committee. We're trying to, because that's been our biggest problem, is getting people to and from the airport and finding places to park. So, but we got a lot of time to be dealing with that and working with that. But that's what we're planning to do this year.
All right. You had the First and Last year this past year. Remember that?
Yeah, actually we did, because the gentleman, he was navigated the flight over Tokyo Bay. He was the lead navigator on the lead B-29.
New Tyndall.
Well, yeah. Tyndall and Cole said we had First and Last year. That's very unusual to not find that.
We didn't publicize any of that, though.
No, but we should have.
Yeah, but, really, you know, this is the first combat mission over Japan and the last combat mission over Japan, but having him here certainly add, you know, if he can still attend, would certainly add to the whole flavor of it.
I think he flew over the ship that when he signed the.
Yeah, he was the lead navigator on the B-29 for the big mass flyover of the Japanese surrender in Tokyo Bay, but that was nearly a month after the Japanese surrendered when they did the formal surrender.
Well, they considered that the last thing. First and last.
Mm-hmm. Well. Let's just hope health holds out for everybody. That's it.
That's it. Okay. Move on to number 9, airport business plan update.
I really don't have much of an update. I think we announced the last time that the business plan is complete. It's been presented to the county council. Just kind of waiting on, you know, direction to carry it out and what parts we'll carry out and that kind of thing. But I really don't have much of an update now. If Todd, you want to say anything about it, but
I'll wait till 11 and I'll grab that.
Yeah.
All right. What are the VOR?
It turned into a much bigger deal than I thought it was going to. apparently the technician up in Wilmington that maintains the VOR decided he was going to make a suggestion that they close that, just based on the amount of money that the FAA is spending on maintaining it because of the flooding and mold and structural problems and so on. So the FAA did their thing, and you know, we're considering decommissioning this VOR. put it out to the public and, you know, all the airports in the, that are affected, and said, what do you guys think? Of course, we said we don't think it's a good idea because it's, you know, two of our approaches and et cetera. We asked, we sent one of those emails out to everybody, send me your comments if you have it, and I got some good comments from people. We sent a letter to the FAA saying we're against it because it's, you know, there's still people that rely on it here and that kind of thing. We thought it would be a good idea since it is a capability that the FAA was proposing to take away from the airport, that we let the county council know that, you know, we're out there fighting for them. Unfortunately, the WVOC reporter was at the county council meeting, and it turned into a big story, and you know, and then the radio station picked it up from the TV station, and so there's really nothing going on other than they're looking at it. We've told them we don't like the idea.
Don't tell me Dan Gaffney got involved.
It just got picked up as
a clown.
I think it was just a news item. First of all, if they do decommission, it's going to take 2 or 3 years.
I mean,
DORs eventually are going to go away. You know, who knows what they'll decide, but, you know, they're in the stage now of asking for public comment, and, you know, they'll make their decision, and we'll see what happens. Like I said, 2 or 3 years at least before you see it go away, if it does.
NDBs were supposed to go out in the 50s.
Yep.
Good point.
So, but that's all I know. Like I said, it turned out to be a bigger deal than what I hoped it would.
Yeah, because not all aircraft have GPS. So you take the VOR away.
Right. And you know, the FAA did a study. There's like 5% of the aircraft that file IFR flight plans that don't have VOR. You know, and if you look at the mix of aircraft they're looking at versus the ones that actually fly here, I would say we're probably 10% of our aircraft that don't have it. And if you look at the percentage of the time that they actually need it, you know, that's probably 10% of the time at the most. So you're only talking about 1% of the time that somebody really needs it. And
then you can't plan for it to be an alternate if
right.
you don't have it. So
mm-hmm.
It's the only approach I've got when I come into Mitchell.
Yeah.
Is VOR.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever wonder why they call it the Waterloo VOR?
Nobody knows.
Actually, that's not true.
I do know.
Somebody does know. I asked John Reichert the other day, and he didn't know, but he went to the guy who would know, which is Joe Hudson. Because it was commissioned back in, I think, 1962, and, you know, Joe was around back then. So according to Joe Hudson, that area over there used to be known as Waterloo. There was a little, I guess, a small town or something over there that in that area was known as Waterloo, and that's why they named it the Waterloo VOR. That's from Joe Hudson. Don't know if it's true, but don't know why it wouldn't be.
That sounds good to me.
That sounds good to me, too. So
Joe would know.
That's why, yes. He would know, for sure.
And also, just for the counties to understand, they're supposed to close those breaches off. They're working on trying to fill those breaches. And once they do that, that'll significantly settle the fluctuation of the flooding. So
there was some talk about, you know, can the county do something to save it, and, you know, anything construction wise over there. It's in the middle of the wildlife area, so, you know, the environmental stuff would take forever. And
why couldn't it be moved here on the airfield where it's supposed to be? I mean, that's really where you need a VOR. I mean, why? I don't know.
Well, you'll never see them move a VOR.
No.
They'll eliminate it first.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen
the circuitry in most of these VORs? It's still vacuum tube circuitry.
They've never
transistorized these things. They're still using 50s technology, 50 and early 60s technology in these things.
They're vacuum tubes. Approach, you won't end up over to town.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice if it could be here. Maybe we ought to suggest to the FAA that that's the viable alternative. Don't decommission it. Move it. Certainly does make a VOR approach easier, like a Salisbury.
Of course, it messes up Victor 1. I mean, because...
I have no idea.
That would be an FAA expense,
well,
right?
Well, you could probably put a VOR in there instead of putting the two mics out here and all the profit.
Well, we've got room out there in the middle of the airport for a VOR.
That's all I had about the VOR.
We could rename it the Hicken VOR.
We're very concerned about that VOR.
Yep. And we've expressed that concern, and Senator Carper's office is going to call the FAA and let them know their constituents are concerned, and they probably won't burn a whole lot of political capital in trying to save it.
Is that federal land?
The wildlife area, I think it is.
Yeah.
I don't know what your wife does then. Everybody's happy with it.
Yeah. So they'll look at everybody's comments and the cost and benefit and make a decision.
So they'll weigh the one technician versus all the other comments.
And cost.
Who the technician is. It is the FAA. Anything
that's
else?
Why we contacted the delegation too, because that's a federal thing. One phone call and that list gets switched and you go to the bottom quickly. So I don't know that it will take it off the list, but maybe we'll be decommissioned later than others.
I mean, it affects like Garrett's gas business, fuel business. You people come in here for fuel, or they can't list it as an alternate. You know, if you can't get into another airport by GPS, you can't use this as a alternate because you don't have another means. And that's the things that I don't think the non-aviation community understands. So I think the county's done a good job, I think, of going to bat. Just don't put your swords away yet. Keep charging.
All right, move on to number 11, airport branding.
Okay. So the last, huh? This kind of segues into Jim's airport business plan update. You know, we had the Randall Wiedemann do his exercise last year, came down and presented to the committee, and then came back and presented to the council his business plan. And one of the things that I'm interested in exploring, and I think it starts with this committee here, is probably one of the key elements in the whole plan itself, in which I got photocopied before it came out here, hanging out today, is this idea of this county's airport brand and his discussion in this business plan is something I wanted to discuss with you all today to just gauge your interest and position. And it became clear when we were here and we went through the SWOT exercise that, at least in my mind, that the airport and the industrial park as a whole, all 700 acres that's out here, perhaps has an identity crisis. And you talk to people in town, it's the Georgetown Airport, you talk to folks around the county, it's the county airport or Sussex County Airport.
Mm-hmm.
Our airport code is GED. You drive in this way to the airport and you see one name on the sign. You drive in on the industrial side and you see another name on the sign. And if we took it to another level of the fact that we're dumping $30 million in this facility over the last 10 years, 15 years, and still going, what are we getting out of that? And what do we want to do about that? Is this something that we just want to keep the way it is? Or if we take a little effort and look at what Wiedemann perhaps is suggesting and do something with it, maybe it will grow this facility. I'm not a marketing guy. I'm not a PR guy or anything like that. But one of the things that I can understand is if you drive on one side of the facility and the name is different than the other side of the facility, there may be a gap there that is an issue. And if I have a gap and I'm supposedly the guy that some days is in charge, I can only imagine what other folks are thinking. So I just wanted to toss that out to the committee, see what your thoughts are, and maybe talk about this idea that we improve the branding of the the airport. And, you know, what am I really asking? I'm asking, is the committee, does the committee share the same view that, that Randall provided us, and also that I'm discussing here today? And, you know, one of the things that he suggested strongly is considering changing the name of the airport, or at least consolidating one name through this whole facility. So I'll stop there and open it up to see what you all think. If we were going to do, if we were going to do something, obviously it would have to go up the chain, and I think it should start with this committee. If there's any sense of recommendation or consideration, it should start here. The users, and this is what the committee is designed for. It's kind of consideration. So I'll leave it with that and see if anyone has any comments.
I got two comments. One, there's two different names for the airport and two different uses. When you're from a marketing standpoint, et cetera, the general public, you can name it whatever you want, but when you're flying in here, if you go with a long name, there's a lot of traffic on the same frequency. So trying to squeeze in what you're doing while you're flying with everybody else, if you had to say Southern Delaware Regional Airport, I'm 10 miles out, you know what I'm saying? Because I do two different calls. Sometimes I'll call Sussex County, and sometimes I'll say Georgetown Traffic.
Mm-hmm.
It just, but that's part of the branding. You know, mm-hmm. what I was thinking with every other airport, it's always the name of the town or the name of the airport. So just keep that in consideration because of the other traffic that's on the same frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So so you can brand it one thing for the, and this is off the cuff for marketing purposes, but like if it sticks with the, in the charts as Georgetown Airport, would that be two separate names? I don't think so.
I mean, I'm like us. Sometimes I call it Sussex. If the plane in front of me is calling it Georgetown, I'll call it Georgetown just for, because I don't want to call it Sussex because the person in front of me might think it's a different airport.
There has been for years, ever since I first moved up here, there's always been this lack of knowledge of what to really call this place.
Mm-hmm.
One person calls it something, somebody else calls it somebody else. Just to be safe, when I'm reporting in, I see here Georgetown, Sussex County. Just so that everybody knows, because, you know, I put a lot of wake turbulence, a lot of air. I like the phrase jetport, always have, because of the connotations of that. It's bigger, more modern,
mm-hmm.
Facilities, everything about it. But I agree, you can't have a four-word name for the airport. It's too much. But Sussex Jetport, nice and quick, nice and short.
That's
kind of
what I was thinking, yeah, Sussex. Because you can still abbreviate that in the air as Sussex.
Yeah, I know. I have, you know, when
Sussex
I first started flying, I landed at a place somewhere down in South Carolina. I forget, or was it Georgia? Maybe somewhere in Georgia along the coast. It's that jetport down there they call. You land, there's hardly nothing there.
I don't know about Essex County, New Jersey. I'm not sure.
There's a place in Michigan, it was in the middle of an orchard. They called that International Airport. So I'm like,
oh, well, Lee Airport was called International. Joe Kakamas called it International for years, but. You're right, there has been a common throughout the aviation community confusion over what you call this airport. One question in this whole process, and I agree with the idea of trying to unify and do some marketing for the airport. We're spending so much money here, we're certainly oriented to market it. You know, I think Wings and Wheels has put, there's people in this town didn't even know there was an airport here. You know, that live less than a mile from here all their life and didn't know there was an airport here. You know, we found that out just going through the whole Wings and Wheels thing, that people were finding the airport here. What was it called in 1943 when it was built?
The Georgetown Municipal Airport.
Georgetown Municipal. That's not when it was built by the Navy, though. What did the Navy call
it? It wasn't built by the Navy. It was built by the CAA as the Georgetown Municipal Airport, but because it used federal funds, you know, just like now, if the federal government pays for it, the federal government gets to use it in times of war and crisis, etc.
So they took over and used it in 43.
They became tenants. Yep.
I'm glad to know that little bit of history. Thank
you.
Yeah.
You didn't know the Waterloo VOR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's confusion about that. But Yeah, it was built as the Georgetown Municipal Airport.
Yeah, I think everybody thought it was built. I thought it was built by the Navy.
I did too.
Now the,
and up until about the time that it opened, the Army Air Corps was going to come in here and not the Navy. They pulled out at the last minute and the Navy came in.
Now the first place called Georgetown, what's on the VFR chart?
Well, you see that a lot though across the country, you know, different approaches. It'll be, the approach will be named after the closest town location because you look it up in your approach plate under the name of the town, not necessarily the name of the airport.
I think we would get to designate what we want to call it on the approach plates.
Well, I just did a quick search of Georgetown on AirNav. There's a Georgetown, Texas, a Delaware, Georgetown, Kentucky, Georgetown, South Carolina. There's 20 Georgetowns here.
Mm-hmm.
So being Georgetown doesn't distinguish us from very
much. Isn't there a Sussex County, New Jersey?
There is.
Well, yep. And there's an airport there. Sussex Airport.
The only thing I was concerned about is just the traffic, making your calls. You know, you can call it the regional.
You can call it. Right, that, whatever the kids call it here, the controllers call it Georgetown, the pilots call it Georgetown. You can talk to the Baltimore controllers and say, clear direct Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what all ATC always calls it, Georgetown.
So I don't think that the pilot's concern was anything that Randall considered in
right.
his proposal to change
right.
the name. That it was more of a public
mm-hmm.
perception of the airport. You know, maybe pilots out in California that are looking for, you know, a place on the East Coast
right.
to go on vacation or whatever. And, you know, that was why the Southern Delaware Coastal and all those names.
But I agree that
I think the pilot communication thing is probably a separate issue. And
I think jetport
mm-hmm.
could be a negative for small aircraft traffic. Piston, the single engine piston guys see the word jet in there and they're going to assume high ramp fees, high fuel prices.
That's a very
perception
good
is reality, you're right.
But I mean, it ties into the economic development piece that you know, whatever the county's plans are for a new development director might.
But
have
most ramp fees are public.
No, they're not.
They're rarely
I can't remember if anybody.
Proprietary.
Yeah.
Did you ever tell anybody getting lost because you got this name?
Say what?
You ever tell Paula getting lost because you got this name?
Well,
yeah.
I was kind of where I was headed.
Yeah, we did. We had an aircraft that landed last fall. They thought they were going to Sussex, New Jersey. They landed, got out of the plane, came in looking for rental cars.
Well, that's good. We gained on that.
And they were trying to get to where they're going, and then they realized they were in the wrong state.
Did you set up over here?
We did. We got 500 gallons of fuel in them.
Did they fly for Delta?
Before they could even realize they were in the wrong place, we ran it there.
Did they have Delta pilots flying the airplane?
I would think that one thing that the marketing director or whoever takes the place there probably ought to look at is, you know, does the name actually is what brings people here to go to Sussex? You know, how much of that is. You know, I don't know whether you do that through a questionnaire or a survey or there's any kind of previous studies.
Well, the presentation, because I attended the council meeting, was more along the lines of an overall marketing, not just the airport, but
right.
Sussex County. And how does the airport tie into the overall brand of Sussex County as a destination for tourism and travelers? Kind of the way the Outer Banks has created a brand for themselves. That's what I took out. That's what I got out of Randall's presentation, just kind of a much bigger
right.
piece that the airport is one component of.
Because like Manio, where did Manio come from? That for the, I mean, down there. Where a lot, but everybody's hollering on radios headed to Manio, especially in the summer.
That's the name of the town that the airport's in.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's almost bad word, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, where Manio? What the hell?
Well, I think it's a bigger picture item like Garrett was talking about of taking this whole facility and branding it and marketing it. And I don't know if we would gain more traffic or more tenants or just more recognition. But I see room for improvement,
mm-hmm.
Certainly. And even if improvement means clarity, then that's something we should entertain. We're getting ready to erect a sign out on Route 9 to advertise the airport and businesses located on this side of the airport, including our new restaurant, and we don't know what to put on the sign.
That's right.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that's how much of a dilemma we have.
LED.
And we actually paused it and waited for Randall's plan to come out so that we could have this discussion. And I wanted to broach it with you all to see what the sentiment is. I mean, my position is we should take the whole picture and look at this and think of, if we name, if we put the word coastal in it, does it get the rich tourists that want to go to the beach flying in and out of here? I'm not smart enough to understand.
I don't think that's a destination changing life event.
Right.
If I'm going to go to Atlantic City for gambling, I may figure out which airport. That might be the last thing I do.
Yeah.
You know.
And if you put Southern Delaware, you might end up in Greenwood. They got nice.
Then the industrial park would be another its own marketing point as well. Because it couldn't be part of the jet port because that's an industrial park.
Yeah, we would certainly. The way I see it is it's one facility. So whatever this is, it's in the industrial park. So I don't know how we do that. We wouldn't. This is side of the airport. But if this becomes the coastal Delaware jet port, then I don't know if that just is called something else.
Coastal Delaware industrial park. Right.
You know. Or on certain materials, it's an industrial park. You know, because if Jim's at the fancy expo in Las Vegas with his nice booth touting the county airport or whatever the new name is, we're not just going to have the airport pictured. It's going to be the whole 700 acres with Mark on. You'll be in that booth too.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say, we're actually in the airport. I mean, officially. So I mean, the biggest hangars and facilities on the airport are actually in the airport. For us, we really don't need planning. We get pilots call, say, what's the airport? We give them a three-letter identifier. But as pilots, you guys are flying in and out of here, so you're calling into ATC on a regular basis, and I can see where there might be some confusion with that. I mean, as pilots, do you look for a destination spot? Do you look at a...
First thing is where you going.
Yeah.
Not by the airport, but where you going.
Your location.
And then look back, just whip out your iPad and look and see what's closest airport. Yeah, and then you look and see, okay, what's runway length? you find the closest airport and then look what services, capabilities, fuel, et cetera, is there.
Maintenance, fuel, and food.
Yeah. And then you look and see what the fuel cost is. Mm-hmm. And if it's $6.85 a gallon, and you look at another airport that's only 3 or 4 miles over here, it may be 20 miles away, but maybe on 3 miles different from your destination where you're going, and their fuel prices is $5.85, and you got to buy 300 gallons of gas, 400 gallons of gas, whatever, where you're going to go. So that's sort of the decision tree you follow. Where are you going to go first? Back up to what's the airport closest by, then you look at what's the airport capabilities, runways, lighting, instrument approaches, everything. Does that meet, Gary, is that what you do too? Some of the kind of thing?
Sure, yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah. Everybody else, Gus, y'all?
Yeah, and then with
the
weather,
same kind of decision tree?
Weather, go back and
exactly.
See if it all jives.
So the name of the airport really is not that relevant, except when you're marketing, the whole thing more to the general public. But you're right, there's always been confusion about this place. That was always a source of amusement. What's the name of the airport? I don't know. Some people call it Sussex County, some people call it Georgetown.
And I don't know that.
We weren't even sure who built it.
It's going to be years to get over that confusion of calling, because you're going to have the Joe Hudson's.
But,
something different than the guy that just gets his ticket today.
I think that it's a grand idea, but it is a... to look at maybe rebranding it, but look at rebranding it in conjunction with the Southern Delaware Tourism and whoever winds up replacing Julie or that position or whatever, that the economic development all together looks at it as an entire picture, not segmented as any one particular thing.
Sure. And I mean, Garrett makes a very valid point. You know, I know I never really thought about it before, but subconsciously, when it's a jet port.
Yeah, that.
Next thing I go to is fuel price. Boom. Mm-hmm. And I start looking at the adjacent, you know, mm-hmm. you know, maybe I don't belong in there as a piston propeller aircraft. I belong in there only if I was a jet. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's.
But what changes your mind? But you still have to look.
Where the boss tells me she wants to run
there
up and get hooked up.
All the free flight planning's out the door.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, when I went down to Pensacola in January, it's the same thing. You know, you look at what the fuel prices are, you look at what your destination is, and you look at, you know, who's got maintenance and mm-hmm. what's the timeline. And then you get into weather, and if the weather's going to drop, then you really start looking at the approaches. And that's where you get concerned with what kind of lights you got.
Right.
So. You know, the presentation, one thing that was brought up in this presentation was about the operating deficit of the airport. You know, that actually got picked up in the newspaper and the television station too. But so part of this was about how do we minimize the operating deficit of the airport. And, you know, changing the name of the airport may or may not bring a few more planes in every year, but really it was about how to get more businesses here. They're going to rent a pad and pay, you know, a fixed amount per month. I mean, that's cash flow that the county needs to offset the mm-hmm. operating costs. Having, you know, selling 100,000, couple thousand gallons of fuel is not really going to move the needle too much on that deficit, but line up a 10-year lease, 1-year lease, and they're paying $5,000 a month, and they're bringing jobs into the airport is what it's really about, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, Todd, I can understand you got this project on hold. You're trying to promote arenas and get people out here, and you got signage, and you're waiting. So I can certainly feel for that. But I really think whatever the new economic development role is going to be, whoever it's going to be, the administration of the county, or a hybrid, or as a new person, or whatever it's going to be, but I think it's really about how the airport's promoted to the business community, more so than
what
to the pilot.
What do you want here? You want more hangars or more businesses?
And when Jim and Mark are out in Vegas at the next convention, you know they need to be able to promote the business attributes of this airport and mm-hmm. how great it is. You know the approaches. You know we want low approaches because it would mm-hmm. probably be an aviation-related business. So you want to have good infrastructure at the airport, mm-hmm. but it's not really about driving. I don't think it's about driving a lot more pilots here. I mean, you know, it's marginal. You're just picking at the barges. If you get a couple more wealthy people by, you know, that flying here on their jet twice a summer, that's good. They're great for my business. I mean, I'll make more money at it. But I think that the presentation was more picture about getting tenants here.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things is, and we don't do that here because this is our home airport, but transportation. If I was a transient pilot and I needed to land here and wanted to go to the beach, whether I'm a jet pilot and my clients wanted to go to the beach or whether I want my family to go to the beach, how do I get there from here? You know, I don't worry about it because I'm at home. This is my home. So, I mean.
Well, you line up rental cars.
Well, we do. We have a couple options for people in that scenario. We have, first of all, we have a couple of airport cars that I own that I just give to a pilot who for a short term. You need it for a couple hours. Just need to go in town, go to Millsboro, do some business. That happens regularly, almost you know, a couple times a week. Then you have people that drop just on a whim, fly here on Saturday, want to go to the beach. So Enterprise usually drops some extra cars here on Friday afternoon so we can accommodate those people. And then when that runs out, Beach Taxi, it was a taxi company located over in the Rehoboth area. We have a good relationship with them. They can be out here usually in 30 minutes or so. So, you know, between the, you know, we're usually able to pull something together for the people that are just, they haven't planned anything, they just drive, literally just, they show up, they think they're flying in the BWI, because they just show up and they go, where's the rental cars? You know, they, like, they assume there's a fleet of cars out in the parking lot, just waiting for them
mm-hmm.
to show up. We explain them, doesn't work that way, but we can cobble something together for them. So, you know, it generally works pretty well. You get times in the summertime where it's overflowed, but, I mean, that's come up before, you know, I've heard that comment before. Should we get DART involved and have this be a stop, you know, on their core, on their routes? And, you know, I mean, that probably would be a good thing, but I don't know how much traffic it would generate.
Mm-hmm.
don't think the folks flying in here to go to the beach are want to jump on a dark bus after that.
Nope.
No. Usually, you know, we can give them a rental car or give them. Mm-hmm. There's a workaround for it.
What's the beach taxi charge?
Well, it's not cheap. I think it's like $30 each way or something. I mean, you know, but you know, I don't know.
I mean, I can tell you the one reason I don't go to Atlantic City is because there's no good way to really get from Atlantic City Airport downtown.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. Without being raped. I mean,
what's the distance?
Why would you want to go?
I didn't say I wanted.
30 miles.
Yeah.
I go to Hamilton. It's 43 miles, and I drive right by Atlantic City Airport, and right. It cost me $250 to land at Atlantic City, so I don't go there.
Well, let me ask you this: and looking at the guys in the front, let's jump over the actual name. Is the exercise of renaming the airport worth it? And let's assume the branding comes behind it, the marketing comes behind it. It's more than just the airport community. It's airport, it's business, it's tenants, it's marketing in Vegas, it's Pat's out in the industrial discussion. Is it worth changing the name from Sussex County Airport or Georgetown Airport to some mix thereof to create this new era of whatever this place is going to be?
I personally don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think that causes anybody else to come in for it. I just don't think, but it needs to be one name.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's owned by and operated by the county.
Right.
So for not to have Sussex, then the county has to say, well, wait a minute, it's our airport, but we're
right.
I call it Georgetown,
yeah.
But it's in the town of Georgetown. So everybody refers to, usually, like Gus was saying, is what town's it in. So
it's on the map, says Sussex County Airport.
I think from an administrative standpoint, you need to have one name.
Georgetown.
And whether it's Jetport or whatever, it depends on who you're targeting. Now, you've heard two different opinions. Jetport, to me, is interesting to me because I'm going for jet fuel. The Avgas guys, they're like, well, no, I'm not going there. But that's not your target market. Jetport sounds good to Harris Teeter people. We're going to the Jetport. That's your market. That's the people you want here. So while we may not particularly care for that part of the name, your target market, it sounds better, you know. I mean, let's face it, Sussex County has a stigma, you know, from Lower Delaware. That's what we're trying to overcome. Whether it is whether there's an actual economic benefit to it, maybe, maybe not. That's kind of hard to quantify. But from a branding standpoint, I think it would go a long way in elevating, because you spend $30 million here,
right?
So you want something that is attractive, you know, and just something as simple as shirts and hats that are really neat looking.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're somewhere in Florida and you see somebody with a Jetport shirt on, you know, somewhere it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you've been into Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's where it's more important, because then it's an identity. Mm-hmm. Somebody can wrap, the people can rally around that rather than the fragmented stuff. You know, from a pilot standpoint, we'll sort it out because FAA tells us we have to.
But well, I'll go next. I think it is a good idea because it'll generate publicity. You'll put out a press release, if nothing else. You know, I don't know what it's, and I preface this by saying I don't know what it would cost to make a change. I don't know if it's just new letterhead or if there's more cost involved, and you know. But so let's take cost out of it for the moment. But you'll, at a minimum, you'll generate a press release. You'll say, you know, we're pleased to announce the new naming of the former Sussex County Airport. You know, we put $30 million, and we made these improvements. The runway's this long. You know, you promote all those things, and it's going to get into all the trade publications. There are probably over a dozen or more publications, both electronic and print, that'll get into. And it's just, you know, it's just possible that some flight department manager somewhere will see it and it'll plant something in his head. And 6 months later, when his boss says, you know, we're buying another jet, you know, we need to keep it somewhere in the Mid-Atlantic area. Find me a location. It's just possible that that could spur that kind of development. So I hear what the pilots are saying. I'm a pilot as well, so I hear the sensitivity to, unless it's called Georgetown Airport, the word Georgetown is not going away.
Correct.
So it is what it is as far as that goes. And I also heard someone comment that it's kind of a long name, and it is kind of a long name. If you're going to use the proper, you know, proper English up there, and you're going to say, you know, approaching the Southern Delaware Coastal Airport, that's a mouthful on the frequency.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I think the name change just as trying to generate publicity that would cost you money to try to get into those 15 or 20 publications. I think there's benefit from that perspective.
Okay. If you had a nice logo, I mean, you face it, you go with High Appeal. If Tim's going to be out there, he's got a nice logo behind him, and then you've got the wings and wheels with some of the stuff that's happened there and what it attracts and everything. You're really then you're building a brand, and I think that becomes powerful.
Well, and I've said this before. That's been my problem. I go to all these conventions and stuff, and you know, people are walking around with their shirts, you know, LAX, BWI, and you know, I'd
go
out there with my GED. You know, they think I'm bragging about my high school diploma or something. You know, so I mean, GED doesn't.
How do you know that? They asked you.
Well, changing the airport identifier is going to be even trickier. Are you proposing to try to change the identifier as well?
Sure.
Okay, well, that changes a lot of databases and.
We're trying to get. We're not going to change you guys from calling it Georgetown when you're coming in. We're not, just not.
Right.
Yeah.
But GED is holding on to that old name. If we go somewhere different, so yeah, I would entertain.
But also remember, you're only really the people that call it Georgetown all the time are the people that are here.
Yeah.
The 30 pilots. Everybody else is reading it off the chart.
Mm.
So whatever the name, most of the time. You know, because they got the charts coming in, they're reading whatever it says there.
I'm just thinking back. I'm sitting over here thinking back all the different places that we travel around in the summer. And what does ATC call it, what the pilots call it, and what's the name of the airport is always two different things.
Yeah.
If you're headed into Tyco, you know, they call it Tyco. Everybody calls it Tyco. It's Titusville, Florida. That's not the name of the airport. It's not even related to the name of the airport, but that's what everybody calls it. But In answer to your real question, I think it would be a grand idea to consider changing the name of the airport in conjunction with a full marketing campaign to get the word out across the country as what the capabilities of this airport is and what is available here at the airport, and make that all part of one big push. It's conjunction between tourism and economic development and marketing for the county all together. Wrap it all up together.
Tax base. Available workforce, all those things go into the
economy. Yeah, no income tax, no personal income tax, all those neat things.
Well, we have a personal income
tax. Who, Delaware?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't live in Delaware. So.
There's
no sales tax. Excuse me. There's sales tax. Well,
what am I
saying?
I know.
I live in Maryland. Might as well live here, as much time as I spend here. My wife accuses me of living here.
I don't want to belabor it. You know, we're taking what Larry's saying, you know, I'm thinking to myself right now, we're still got that next 500 feet out there somewhere and a master plan for a road alignment and all of these things that are still to come. You know, would it make sense to drop whatever a marketing campaign would cost right now, or would it make sense to wait until those things are in motion and you've got a clear understanding that 6,000 is coming?
I would tie it all together with like a grand reopening of the airport in association with the 6,000-foot runway, and that way you get that word out across the country. So I was talking to some people today that produces the Ocean City Airport, and one of the things they were looking at, I reminded them, you know, our runway is going to be extended here before long because, you know, not Blues or Thunderbirds never be able in here because now some of their new restrictions is 7,000 and 8,000 feet, but you know, some of the other, you know, performers like the nice long runways. Right now, Salisbury would have, you know, the preference over here, but people don't know, and they're not going to look it up unless you sort of put it in front of them, and that's I'd wrap it all together, renaming the marketing, the economic development, the tourism, all together in a whole package, and tie it around the reopening of the airport with a 6,000 foot extension, potentially new approaches, et cetera, and get that word out. You know, Garrett's right. All the Indy transponder, you know, all of these different media is going to pick it up in a heartbeat, and then it's going to be across the country free. Yeah.
But on the other hand, the 6,000 foot runway may not happen for a long time.
Yeah.
And by doing it now, it may generate enough interest that, you know, maybe we get that one Hawker 800 to be based here that's flying all the time that justifies a 6,000 foot runway.
Yeah. When you say a long time, you mean it's not going to be next year?
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath.
Don't order the new Hawker yet.
What? Tell it, do it with the 5,500 foot. Do it like late springtime.
That was a good time.
14 years and I've been talking about runway extensions since almost the day I got here.
And we've spent a lot of money, and you know, I think with all the money the county spent, you know, making some kind of big announcement now makes sense, because you know, we kind of show what we got for the money.
Okay. I got to start. I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, I thought it was a little misspoken. I was really talking about the reopening this spring after the runway extension. I shouldn't have been using the phrase 6,000, but 5,500.
Yeah. And the other thing, I don't know how the county goes after or tries to generate, but like the people that are buying the chicken plant down there, or the old plastic, and going to make it a chicken plant. Is there any type of outreach to them, say, hey, by the way, to the CEOs and everybody, hey, this is only 12 miles from Millsboro, you know, if you wanted to fly in, there's that opportunity. Because they'll go to BWI.
I know that.
You know, they'll go to BWI and fly in there, and then they get a rental car 2-3 hours, and they're over here. And then, well, why didn't you fly in Georgetown? Huh?
Yeah. Their plan is to fly chicken out of here, so that's the county wants them to.
Right.
Canned chicken like canned tuna, right? That's tongue in cheek, but there is a little truth
to
that.
Better chicken than fish.
So, I mean, I don't know how the airport, the county, Delaware reaches out and says, hey, these are the available assets, and you know, Delaware brings to the table, that Sussex County brings to the table, that the airport brings to the table. I don't know how that's, unlike you, it's not my area of expertise.
Well, we're getting ready to drop $4 million this summer on improvements that you guys are going to see day to day, and anyone else that comes in here is going to notice right away. And that may be a good point to think about right now. Why wait? So, as long as there's no extended delays or problems with prepaid, sure it is, we'll hear.
If somehow, I would think it would be good for people coming in here if they knew that there's rental cars available without any delays.
It all ties together with
that's
the branding.
That's what I mean.
And
so
it wins and wheels.
Yeah.
I never did
well,
it.
Yeah. That's pretty much a must. I'm thinking if I'm flying in, I would have to know. So that should be marketing rental cars available.
Well, that's why you do a quick check AirNav to find out what's available.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's on the website, and it should. I mean,
is there any problem with
sure, there's a problem. You got to make a profit on this stuff.
No.
They're not government cars. If it's government cars, they can do anything they want to do. They just spend their money.
No, but I mean, is there any problem now, Sam, if they came in and wanted a rental car without any delays?
Well, let's start with, what I'm trying to tell you is we don't have enough customers to do that have a requirement for cars.
Yeah.
Normally, though, you call ahead.
Well, I tried to get Hertz. I met with Hertz about 2 years ago. I met with him and tried to get him to set up a base right here. You know, we got all the parking, you know, we had discussions, but they just didn't see the numbers, I guess. And
that's
they
right.
Elected not to. So there's really only one game left, which is Enterprise. Used to be we had a Hertz location here in town, and we had Hertz and Enterprise competing, but Hertz pulled out, and so all we have left was Enterprise. But they do a great job.
Where's the Enterprise
site? It's over
site
by First State. And they shuttle cars back and forth there all the time.
Yeah, they generally, Enterprise generally across the country does a great job.
Yeah, that's okay.
But normally you call.
Sam, here's your trivia question.
You
since we're in a trivia question, why is Enterprise
so
Rent-A-Car named
notice.
Enterprise Rent-A-Car?
Yeah.
Our notice in there could be a rental car here for them.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it named Enterprise Rent-A-Car?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way
yeah.
Aaron
that's what I mean.
What?
If they're tall, they're our way. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, have you tried to steal Enterprise over here from First State?
Oh yeah.
What's their response?
Well, First State, they got, I mean, First State's probably 60% of their business.
Right.
Or probably 20, you know, if that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to go away from First State.
If it's only, what, a couple miles away or so, how long do you have to get in a car and bring it over here?
Usually as long as the people have called ahead, there's a car here waiting for you.
Well, I'll tell you, I just got back from California 2 weeks ago, and we went to, and believe it or not, we went to Los Angeles Airport. We didn't know it had no fancy name. And then we got to the airport, we had a show. Then after we got there, we said, we'd like to travel around, so we went to the hotel and asked them about Rittner Hertz, and they said something like $60-$65 a day. And then we went over to the other hotel, and it's about the same price. And of course, I told the guy, I said, I'm not trying to buy this car, just like to rent it. and I got on the phone and looked down the list and bought and rented one for $19.95 a day. So, and you know what they had to do? They had to drive the thing over 2 or 3 miles over to where it was at. They said, we'll bring it on over and we'll drive you back. Just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see no big deal about it. It's over there. I'm glad you're that close. Call them up, said, drive the thing over, we'll drive it back and we'll take off in the car. It's that simple. I go to a lot of airports, and I, pretty every time I end up renting cars, and you can use your rent or your insurance, or you can use theirs. And I soon learned that you better use your insurance, but that goes on. Anyway,
would you know the aviation connection to Enterprise Rent-A-Car, and why it's named Enterprise Rent-A-Car? That's the question.
I tell you the truth, I don't know who you're in the last.
Jack Taylor. Jack Taylor, who was the founder of Enterprise Rent-A-Car, flew fighters off the USS Enterprise in World War II in Korea. And so when he started his rent-a-car business, he named it after the aircraft carrier he flew Hellcats off of.
I've heard that name before, Enterprise.
He's still alive. He lives down in Florida. Health is starting to fail, but he's still around.
Yeah.
No, Gary, I wasn't aware that what you just said about Enterprise coming over here and so on. So in an hour or less, then if they call in an hour or something like that, you can have a car here.
Even less than that. I mean,
that's what I mean. Well, you just give a benefit of that. I'm just tossing the number.
And they have a dedicated drive. The Enterprise office has a dedicated person who just shuttles cars back and forth. We're not the only place to deliver cars to.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Well, that's
they do a very good job. I'm very pleased with it. We're lucky to have them. A lot of airports, you go to some small airports, they won't deliver cars.
Mm-hmm.
Go to College Park or Tipton or some of the ones I've been through. They won't bring a car to you, and it's a big hassle. So we're real lucky that the Enterprise management works with us so well.
Number 12, public comments.
We've done pretty good on this.
All right, next meeting date. Since we missed January.
You need to discuss your frequency.
How often
are
you going to meet?
We were doing every other month.
Were we doing it every month or once
every
a quarter?
Other? Every other. But that's
you
your
bring us through the vote on what's the? Do you want
to
do it before the construction? Because it would be. It's the third Wednesday. It'd be the 19th.
Fourth Wednesday.
It's the fourth.
All right. So it'd be the 26th, which would be.
Right before
construction would be next month.
Or you just want to wait to the middle of it, and where we're halfway through the construction.
Let's do it in April.
April?
Yeah.
Be the 23rd.
I'm loading
it. It'd be the 23rd.
Easter.
That's Easter week.
Yeah.
Is that Easter week?
That's Easter week.
That's the Wednesday after Easter.
Well,
yeah, but it's spring break.
Kids are off that week.
What's that?
It's spring break.
That doesn't bother me.
I know,
and the runway will be open, so you guys will be out flying. And the runway will be open.
I love you.
Doesn't bother me.
Walking out of here, happy guy.
I'm on
cloud nine.
April the 23rd sounds good to me.
Wow. Can I have a motion for?
I'm sorry, probably April 23rd.
Anybody have April 23rd problem?
Well, that's a bi-monthly schedule too.
No problem. Yep.
So that's probably good. It's at least bi-monthly
like
right
said,
now while we're going through all this construction, just to keep up to date with everything.
Send you one.
Yeah.
Can I have a motion next meeting? At
I'll second it.
Okay. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Anything else for the good of the order?
I do. When the committee recommended the minimum standards about a year and a half ago, you had set a review date on it, and I think we're past that now. So, it was like we could put that on the agenda next time.
Mandatory, or was it?
I think the committee made it mandatory. So
okay.
There was
review
a
for the minimum standards.
There was approval, but we'll come back in, I think it was 16 months or something, and review.
Have we had to apply the minimum standards?
Jim, let me ask you.
Yes.
We're going to be in the middle of the construction of the runway, which may be a discussion. Do you want to wait until the following?
I can wait as long as you want to wait. I'm just pointing out that you had set that as a goal to do.
Put that on. Can you put that on the agenda to set the minimum standards?
Because
I think that should be
to review.
Yeah, to review, please. That'll be on the agenda. Then we'll set a date. That's fine.
You want to put it on April's agenda, or for June?
Probably for June.
In April, then you need to consider appointing a few people to actually.
Review
do that review, make
okay.
a recommendation back, set a
mm-hmm.
subcommittee to do a review and report back.
Okay. That's a great idea.
Well, Rick Warner's still on the committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to make sure to
have those examples.
Anything else?
So, motion to adjourn.
Second?
Okay. I'll second it.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimous.